All right, it is 5:30, so we'll call to order the City Council work session for Tuesday, May 27th, 2025. Item of discussion, city engineer slash public works director role separation. All right,
I'll start the conversation and kind of give briefly touched on this a few months ago, but ultimately back in June 2022, we had then Public Works Superintendent Grant Reamer retire. At that time, the City Council and staff talked about, you know, what's next for the department, and the ultimate decision was to make Bruce Gillespie the City Engineer slash Public Works Director. And during that conversation, we talked a little bit about succession planning and what that looks like, with the idea of our now Assistant City Engineer Joe Ferianchek to kind of eventually grow in his role and take over reins as City Engineer. Shortly after that switchover, the council, as noted in the case, provided an influx in pavement management funds, and we massively ramped up our pavement management program. We added several million dollars worth of projects over a 10-year period. That coupled with other private development remaining strong in town, new roads, water, sewer infrastructure, things of that nature, we've ultimately continued to build up the engineering staff. We are at about the 3-year period that we originally kind of predicted to be a transition period and ultimately re-separate those roles. So we brought it forward, and it is noted in the case that Joe at this time is not looking to move forward with the city engineer, but looking at the need for it and things that we would like to see addressed, we do feel like there's still a need to separate the role. We recently adopted two big policies that Public Works would ultimately own, and that's the stormwater maintenance policy and the trail maintenance policy. Both of those have quite a bit of work to just kick off and get going into a somewhat routine manner, as well as prioritizing work and things of that nature. And Bruce, along with other staff here in Public Works, could give those details much better than I. So ultimately, in the case, what we're proposing is to split that role back into a single Public Works Director and a single City Engineer. On the Public Works side, you know, we have items that we can address and get kicked off and get going on the engineering side that would bring staff back over, continue to help prepare plans for our road projects. We have new staff coming on this year in the water resource tech that's really going to take our stormwater needs on the engineering side and move them forward from where we were at. That person is ultimately replacing Len Linton, who that was a large part of his role. And then just to keep up with both the public and private projects, it's still viewed as a need to separate that. From current full-time equivalents in engineering, we'd go from 7.5 to 9 by making it a full-time city engineer. And then the other proposal that we put in this case, that as we work through the budget, we'd be looking for your feedback, is bringing in an in-the-field inspector as well as help a little bit with plan design too when time allows. So we feel like that change would allow us to reduce contracted engineering costs. We do annually have to hire some of that out. Largely it's going to Bolton and Mink, or Hawkins and Anderson are kind of the two main firms, but we are either farming out the plan design and sometimes through inspections of these projects as well, depending on our staffing levels. The other thing that we would hope it would do is reduce down on overtime. And even if it doesn't reduce down on overtime, hopefully at least be able to shift around when our employees are working, so they're not working 6 days a week from when the snow melts to when it starts to fly. That makes for a long summer. I think that's a good high level. If there's any questions, we can definitely answer those, either myself or Bruce and other staff.
Dan?
Can Mr. Mayor. So, yeah, it definitely sounds like it's not going to have a big impact on the budget. You know, as we began to talk about it, it came back to again, which you mentioned last time, we don't want to start, I like the idea, so let's start approving stuff right before the budget season and then get ourselves trapped when the budget, you know, kind of comes. But, you know, high level, it sounds like it's going to be maybe a small increase, but due to decrease overtime, decrease outsourcing, you know?
Yeah, not having perfect numbers ready tonight, but ultimately the city engineer's cost is shared throughout different funds.
Yeah.
So there's a relatively small portion, or I shouldn't say small, but a smaller portion is coming from our annual operating, which is funded through the tax levy. There's a portion that goes to payment management funds that's funded through the tax levy. But then there's a portion that goes to water and sewer, enterprise funds that's paid for by users of that system. The stormwater, same thing. And even on private development, developers have to put in an escrow, and our staff time is built back to that escrow. So in the engineering department budget, that line item shouldn't drastically increase. I'll note that as you watch it through the year, it all goes to the operating budget, and then Diana just does a one-time correction at the end of the year based on actual time spent. And then the other thing that we noted is, you know, we're not proposing to start this now at the three-year mark. We'll look to 2026.
Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
But obviously, you know, Bruce, you're supportive of this. You think it's the right thing to do, and you're ready to, I know your heart's in that engineering, you're ready to give that up and full steam ahead.
100%, yeah.
Cool. Okay. Like, the only question that we would have is, again, we're looking for a 2026 role separation. Our question is really, do we want to start this city engineer closer to January 1, or do we want to wait until after final budget? Some pros and cons. If we wait till after final budget, obviously then it's formally approved along with everything else. You're not, you know, sticking yourself to an approval that has to make it. A pro to doing it around January 1st is hopefully we can get ahead of some of the other recruitments. I don't know that there's necessarily a lot of city engineer roles that open up and get recruited for around January 1st, but there could be some assistant roles that, depending on the city and whatnot, we could have some competition in that. So the question would be, from a recruitment timeline, if we aimed closer to January 2nd start date, we would start that in mid-September, somewhere in there. Otherwise, we'd be looking at closer to a March, maybe late March start date if we waited until after final budget.
Any questions or opposition to a January 2nd start date recruitment in September?
I think that would probably be fine.
Consensus, split the roles earlier than later?
That works.
Easy peasy. Item number 2, right-of-way acquisition loan program, Ralph, property sales / process discussion.
Mr. Mayor.
Oh, yeah.
Real quick kudos. I will say, like, this spring I've heard so little anything about potholes, and it's incredible. So really great job. Thank you for your hard work. And yes. Yeah, I meant there. Yeah, not here. No, I appreciate effort. That.
Thank you.
Shocker,
you spend tens of millions of dollars, and it makes a difference.
I know, right? Find the hard work, too. Shocker. It's really good. Thank you.
Pretty neat. All right, over to Sean, I believe.
All right. Just kind of a little teed up here. This item is namely informational, but there are some things that I am looking for a little bit of direction or some discussion on. So a little bit of background. Some of the more tenured council members are familiar with the Ralph program, but I thought I'd kind of bring everybody up to speed on what it is. The Ralph program is the Right-of-Way Acquisition Loan Fund, and it's administered by Met Council. Purpose of the program is to lend money to cities or units of government to purchase properties for future right-of-way for major projects to kind of assemble, and then when the projects are ready to go, they then roll into those projects. Using that program, originally the Highway 10 project was supposed to shift north. and be up along the railroad tracks. So essentially the city was interested in any and all parcels that were between the existing Highway 10 and the rail. And we bought a number of parcels from 2004 to 2017. So when we acquire those properties, we essentially hold and maintain them until the project is completed. And we're not allowed to improve the property, so you can't fix parking lots, you can't do building additions, you can't do facade improvements. The idea is that these properties are going to get torn down at some point. Don't invest in them. Well, as we are well aware, the project has shifted. So it's now southward within the existing Highway 10 right-of-way. And there were some parcels that we did acquire using the RAL funds, namely around the intersections that were needed for the project. So Anoka County essentially purchased those via MnDOT. But we're left with about 14 properties that we currently own that likely are not going to be needed for the Highway 10 project. Get more to what we'll do with those. For each of those properties, there's a loan agreement. So whatever we borrowed from the Met Council to buy is in a loan agreement. It should be noted that the loan agreements and the loans that are out do not need to be paid in full. We'll get to that a little bit too. All lease proceeds from RAL properties can be used for city administration, property maintenance, and such. The remaining rent and all of the sales proceeds are sent to Met Council. So all those properties we lease, we don't really get any money other than just being a good steward and holding those until they're to be used. Per the loan agreement, it maps out what happens when they're to be sold if they're not needed for the project, and it's defined as fair market value, which in turn Met Council has deemed the appraised value. So we've been working with Met Council on appraisals and with potential buyers. Talk a little bit more. So the way the sales process will work is, number one, you need to determine if the right-of-way is needed for the project. If it's not needed, which is what these 14 parcels are that we'll talk a little bit more detail about, we'll work through how we sell those. The other properties, such as the vacant lot next to Sunfish Commons, was already acquired by Anoka County and rolled into the project. Whatever, like plants and things like that. But whatever is not needed on those properties will be turned back later, not through RALP, so it's a different thing. So we're not going to talk about turnbacks in great detail tonight. The goal is that we'll be listing all of these properties on MnCar and hopefully potentially selling to existing lessees or adjacent property owners for the appraised value as possible. So if we have people that are in there right now and they want to buy it, trying to do that if possible. And again, as mentioned, proceeds from the sale are all remitted to RALP to replenish that right-of-way acquisition loan program for other cities. This is what I'll call the Eastern Overview, parcels 1 through 11 and parcel A. But you can see Sunfish Lake Boulevard interchange here. You can't see the interchange because where it used to lie. Runs all the way up to about the Pro Power Sports over here. What I plan to do is kind of go through kind of a parcel-by-parcel basis to let you kind of know what's happening on all of them. So starting kind of on the Anoka side and working our way westward, parcels 1 and 2 are really one parcel. This used to be the old Ralph's Gun and Pond. So one was the building, one was the parking lot. So these properties, a little bit, about a half acre apiece. They're both under RALP loan 0602. So it's the assumption is once we get the appraised value on this, we will go ahead and list on a MnCar as both of them together and sell it. Does that seem to make sense to the council?
Census.
Thanks. Oops, we'll go this way. Moving down, we get into some interesting parcels here. So we'll start with parcel 3. Parcel 3 is the former Premier Commercial Properties building, which ultimately became a parking lot for the Outpost. So a little history on this property. And again, when there was an agreement that was made when this was purchased so that the Outpost and this other entity could use this property, and then the lease or the use of the property would go away once the highway project happened. Well, that was under the premise that both of these buildings would be demolished and Highway 10 would move forward. That's not going to happen. So I've been in discussions with Met Council on this, and and they are in agreement that we ought to either sell it to the Outpost or Summer Lakes Beverage and get cross easements and everything along those lines. Again, just kind of looking for consensus on the council if you guys are in support of that.
Definitely.
Does this tell me fair market value, or does it?
Yeah, so I have to get an appraisal. Now, I have worked with the appraiser on that and kind of explained that you can't appraise this as if you were going to build a new building on this site, because that just is not feasible here, because they need that access in order to access there.
So they didn't have that as part of their parking lot, other than a little bit in front, right?
Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, you couldn't get a building.
Yeah, whatever we can do to make sure they can get it, for sure.
So this one here,
do they have a desire to acquire that?
I would say there's been discussions on it, but we really haven't gone down that path because we've been waiting for a value. So
sure.
I've talked to Jimmy over at Outpost, and I haven't talked to the folks at Summer Lakes, but okay. I'm sure we'll be able to figure something out.
Okay.
Yeah, Outpost only has, maybe 20 parking spots, and that's...
Yes. We have a strong argument with the Met Council that we're not going to sell this to somebody else. So.
Okay.
Parcels 4 and 5. This is an interesting one. So we purchased this one utilizing the RALF program, and shortly after we put a city storm pond on it. So it's part of our city storm system. When it backs up, it goes this way, and it goes along Highway 10. So one could make the argument, which I've already made to Met Council, that this parcel is needed for stormwater for Highway 10, and we are asking them to let us keep this at no cost. A good position?
Yes.
Okay. Let's find some sucker to buy it near to the pond.
Want to own a pond?
They just need a house.
Dan's campaign speech. Get a sucker to buy it.
So the next parcel 6 here, it's kind of a long, skinny parcel. It's 1.11 acres. It's really not ideal. But to the west here is parcel A, and this is one of those turnback parcels. So this is plans and things.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen is you have that big on-ramp that's going on, but there's going to be land behind it that they aren't going to need for the project. So eventually, that's going to come back to the city. So what I've asked Met Council if we can do is if we can keep this property off the market so that we could combine it with this once that becomes available for a more reasonable project. And they've been open to that discussion.
It's in blue. Is that because it's city-owned?
Okay, so this one's in blue because this is one of those turnbacks.
Okay.
So parcel A isn't a RALF property.
Okay.
This was just acquired at the time of the project, so this isn't a city-owned one. It'll become one.
It'll become one. Okay.
Yeah. And it's my understanding, and Bruce might be able to jump in a little bit, but it's my understanding that these turnback parcels... it's really difficult for MnDOT and the county to be able to sell them. So essentially, they just give them to the city.
Okay.
And I don't believe that if we were to sell them, I don't think we pay back the county or state on those. Is that right? Because they're just ours, aren't they?
Yeah, I would say it depends
on
how marketable they think it is. I don't know if Brian wants to weigh in, but...
We'll try to get it so we keep the proceeds.
Yeah. And I purposefully didn't want to talk too much about turnbacks today, but that is going to be something when we have a big pile of them here. There's some on the south side that we're also going to get, like the old, there's a Blue Line Collision and Sound Waves, and there's a couple of other ones. Parcel 7A and 7B, and parcel 8 will roll into the next slide for 8. 7A, this triangle, that's the piece that we've been working on since 2021 to get this encroachment issue solved with Oak Terrace. Knock on wood, we got a closing scheduled for July 6th, so we're hopeful that can get done. Nothing leads me to believe that we won't. The appraised value on that's $43,000. It's kind of a remnant, so that's what the sales price is, and Oak Terrace is paying for all of the closing costs. Parcel 7B, just a vacant parcel here, likely potentially combined with parcels to the west. I'm going to talk a little bit more about those as a whole, but this potentially could be part of a larger project. But this one, there is an appraisal that is ordered for this. So, yes, let me you go back.
It's actually, and I know you don't want to spend too much time on take backs, but could we just briefly mention that little area by Aurelio's that the county owns that we'll be getting back that we could they could potentially buy as a parking lot? Or, you know, William McCoy's or any of those groups? Just because I still hear so much feedback from the businesses and
yep.
from, I don't know if other people do too, from Aurelio's and those guys, but.
So, again, whether or not we get to keep the proceeds or not get to keep the proceeds, that's to be determined. But we are going to likely get a piece of land that they don't need for the interchange or drainage or easements. And it's the intent to sell it to the Sunfish Commons ownership when we get it.
So. That's one thing that I hear a lot is, you know, they're like, well, William McCoy just takes some of the parking spots and Aurelio's can't, doesn't have enough additional spots for people to even eat there and Roberto's Taco. I mean, so it's just kind of like a back and forth kind of thing where they're like, I mean, he told me at least. He's like, I don't even know if I'm going to renew my lease or stay in Ramsey because we just can't have enough parking spots for, you know, that's not the city's fault or anything, but it's just if we could somehow get that, if the development buys those and buys that and uses it for spots, I think it would help everyone. So.
I think that would hold true kind of, and I'll get to it here when I do a summary. So we did this one. So moving along, so this is interesting. So this building right here currently has two tenants, and I'll get into more detail, but the whole back and this area here is Pro Power Sports. This building generally is all Pro Power Sports. There's a portion of it, a small portion by RM Golf Carts, but their lease is up here at the end of May, so that'll basically go away. The lease for Pro Power Sports goes all the way until January 31st of 2026, assume the project completed. Same with this lease. There's another parcel that's down here. They also go up to that date. God's Kingdom is up in this corner. Their lease goes out to the same date by design. And I'm going to leave it at that because we're going to talk a little bit more about them later. But what we're looking at, along with potentially this vacant piece, Pro Power Sports is looking to see what these appraised values come in at. So there might be an opportunity then for them to potentially purchase buildings and or build facilities on this, but until we know costs, they haven't been able to start doing some work on it.
That was my question. So you already answered.
Cool. And again, this is that last piece. So Pro Power Sports, this is their main building right here, so they also lease this over here. And again, appraisals have been ordered. We just don't have those responses yet. Yes, Chris?
The auto repair place that we know the building is in bad shape, will we sell it as a building, or would we consider having it torn down, or it's being appraised as it sits, I assume?
Yes, the building is being appraised as it sits. I walked an appraiser through there and told him how bad a building and terrible condition it was in and how we should be able to tear it down with RALF funds, and they're saying no because we want more money to replenish our RALF program. So once we kind of, again, I don't know if Pro Power Sports is going to lead anywhere, but if it does, I've made it clear to him that that building's coming down. And there might be situations where we're able to tap into HRA dollars for redevelopment or something where we could help to tear it down, but a little bit over the skis to get there. But yes, to your point, Chris, this is a building that, in my opinion, this isn't the future of Highway 10. So if we can find a way to kind of roll it into a larger project, that would be better. This building isn't awesome, but it's actually in decent shape. It doesn't look hideous on the front, and it actually is functional. This one, not so much.
What's the main issues with it? Just leaky roof?
This building?
Yeah.
Well, this used to be an oil change place. So there's a little bit of an office here that's okay. And again, you can look at the building. It's really kind of an interesting shape. This is where they used to change the oil. So back when we brought this tenant in, we basically filled in the oil change with sand and then put a little bit of concrete over the top so that they weren't being down in the pit and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of bays back here that used to be car wash bays. They're using those as repair bays.
Okay.
So it's working functionally for them right now, but it's not ideal, but it's cheap space for them. So yeah. It kind of works for the get-go. And long story longer, this parcel, we technically said we would only allow them to use it for about a year and a half, but it's worked well, so we've kind of extended it each time just because of the timing and such. Questions on these? Okay, talked about this one.
Obviously, there's some kind of easements around the bike. They can, it looks like they own it all the way down to the, you know, this road, so there's no way to get, otherwise it'd be like landlocked, right? One more there. Hey, because
Ramsey
boosts the bike.
Oh, it's under
here. Side. No, okay. No, Ramsey bike is through here. So yes, this access is through here. Okay. So yes, good. So we would definitely have to have some sort of easement.
Councilor Speck, that was actually talked about during the open houses, and to their concern is, you know, there's more of a gentleman's agreement, is our understanding on that, but. We simply asked, what if we just give you direct access to the frontage road, and they seemed open to that. So that's okay. Our plan is just to punch in a driveway for them.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
All right. So kind of a summary of the eastern properties. Appraisals are ordered, but they're not completed. Summary, again, parcel 1 and 2 to be put on the market and sold together. Staff to work with the Outpost Summer Lakes for parcel 3. 4 and 5, Stormwater Pond, and Parcel 6 to be combined with Parcel A when the turnback occurs. We're all in consensus on that. 7A, which is being sold to Oak Terrace for $43,000, closing on the 6th, hopefully. 7B, again, waiting on appraisals to kind of see what the math works out for Pro Power Sports, but essentially, you know, 7B, 8, 9, 10, and 11 are a potential mega project, depending on how that goes. The back of parcel 10 at 6745 is our golf carts. Again, that one goes away. And parcel 9, again, leased by God's Kingdom. So let's talk about lease extension request for God's Kingdom. They currently lease 4,820 square feet at 6701. It's one of the front little portions of the building, or parcel 9. They, you know, were told when they took the lease that it was temporary, and they've known that it's been temporary. And when it was starting to come up, they said, hey, we need more time to find a home, so we extended the lease to 131 of 26, and this was done last December. We, at that time, it was communicated, again, that's when the project's done, we're going to have to sell the properties, that's what our process is, that's what we're being required to do. Regardless, the tenant did ask us for a 10-month extension out to October of 2026, because they haven't been able to find a new location to this point. I did speak with a representative for Met Council and asked them what their appetite was for that, and they did not like it. Their response was, we need to sell the property when the project's complete. We want properties vacant before listing, if at all possible. So I think extending a lease in this circumstance could get us sideways with Met Council on that. So therefore, my recommendation is not to extend this lease, but as part of today's, I'm just looking for direction so that I can communicate to the tenant our willingness to consider that. So we're going to talk about that now.
Is the property that had St. Catherine Drexel, was that still vacant, or did they fill that?
They can't have that church.
Yeah. That was a onesie thing that allowed them, and they can't do that anymore.
Okay. Thoughts from the council? Shanna?
Thanks. Would God's Kingdom be willing to purchase that whole building thing when we get the appraisal in?
It's a big building. It's going to be millions of dollars.
Okay.
And frankly, I'd prefer to see Pro Power Sports there. But that being said, they tend to be just scraping by to make rent. I think an acquisition might be a little out of the realm, but I could ask them if they have interest, if that would be some direction.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mayor. Yeah, I mean, I guess overall, I don't have a preference of tenants. You know, I think churches are amazing for communities. They add a lot of value. So, you know, I would love to see God's Kingdom Church be able to stay in Ramsey and find a new home. I support them wholeheartedly. It's a great church, a great organization. I do think that it's important that we follow the policies set forth by the Met Council, in this instance at least. I wouldn't hear myself say that, but wait a second. No, but just for logistically selling these rural properties, I think it's important that we do keep the lease the same as the other surrounding company, so I would not be in favor of extending it. Nothing to do with the company or who it is, but it's just to keep consistent with the businesses there. And if you happen to help them try to find something else, you know, whatever we can do.
Chris?
Yeah, this was always temporary in nature. I know when we, you know, when we sign the lease, we say, you know, there's a project coming, or you're going to, this has to be temporary. So I'm we've already given them a notice and allowed them to extend once, so I would say not again.
If Pro Power Sports buys the property, that doesn't preclude them from leasing to the God's Kingdom Church, right?
Doesn't, but if, yeah.
If, right, if they wanted to, they could.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Stay with there.
Jan.
So would that be, because that's my question, would that be something that we're having that conversation outside of here to Pro Power Sports if they're interested in the property? What's the likelihood they want to rent out that piece before going back and saying, no, this is dead in the water, you can't keep renting?
I think at this point we don't have enough information.
Okay.
Because we don't know what the level of interest is for Pro Power Sports. I think the only question we legitimately could ask at this point is to God's Kingdom whether they would be willing to purchase the building. I think that's really the only question we could do at this point.
But we could suggest to them to keep an eye out to see who purchases the property and then petition them for an extension, correct? Okay. Dan?
Yeah, I was just going to echo what you said, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, that, I mean, I don't think these are rules that, you know, as the council to tell the business what they, you know, put stipulations on their purchase or encourage them to do this or that. I think we can just stay consistent with all of them with the contract date, and then they can work that themselves if they want to.
So I would say consensus I see forming on not extending the lease, but maybe to give them some pointers on next steps and what some of their options could look like if they decided to go lobby for themselves. I think having everything on one timeline is important to make an exception, even though we support churches, synagogues, mosques, whatever it is, we make an exception for one small corner of one property to throw everything off schedule, I think doesn't make a lot of sense to the city. Okay.
Call this the Western overview. We only have three parcels on this side, so basically, parcel 12, vacant lot. It's right in between, I think it used to be Granite City Auto. I think they're kind of named now.
Granite City Auto now.
What was it?
It's Granite City Auto.
It's still, okay, good. So, vacant parcel, it's about 0.82 acres. As if you recall from a council perspective, used car lots aren't permitted uses moving forward, so allowing an existing business next to it to buy and expand really wouldn't be an option here. So again, it's about an acre. It's not connected to sewer and water right now. Sewer and water is available. It's right here.
Okay.
But that's, again, at some point. I don't have any other, just that's the status. Haven't got an appraisal ordered for this one yet. This is our golf carts right here. They've been leasing the building since 2011 and have been chomping at the bit to buy it ever since they've been in there. They want to redo the front facade of the building, but again, per what I started with, no improvements were allowed. So I think when you look at that property and go, it's not the prettiest of all properties, they do keep their stuff very orderly, and it is their plan to, once they do actually buy it, to improve it. Now, the level of improvement that they can do are very simple things. So, you know, they can add on to the facade, like just an existing, replace it, make it look nicer, but they can't add on to the building. So they are limited when it comes to that. They've also, as part of this thing, they did just get their septic compliance check and their septic pump, so it does work, but they have expressed potentially a willingness to hook up to city services at some point.
Real quick, Sean, are you saying they can't upgrade after they buy it, or just right now they can't?
Is Todd in here?
I'm here.
Yep. You want to talk about legal nonconforming?
So legal non-conforming uses, and Fritz will jump in if I say something wrong, but these properties aren't zoned for it. They once were, so they can basically stay as is. They can do any sort of maintenance, repairs, replacements. They could redo their front facades if they wanted to. They just can't increase their square footages. We don't have a prohibition on, say, like a dollar amount's worth of value, but like some cities do, but they can, yeah, they can reskin that building if they wanted to and make some improvements.
If the council so decided, if they petitioned the council and the council so decided, you don't want to, is that something we could
you would either have to change code or rezone. If you recall, we had a lengthy discussion 2 years ago when we were redoing the zoning code about, you know, if you want to perpetuate these small car dealerships, and kind of the worst of the worst is bringing down all the better of them. So there were some stipulations that were put on, limited to certain zoning districts and certain...
So GoPress is considered like a cart or vehicle lot then or whatever? That's...
Well, for vehicle dealers, it has to be in the B3 zoning district. This area was zoned B2. So it doesn't. It's, if you wanted to allow for expansion, then we'd have to figure out, okay, where's the limit and rezone a chunk. You can't just rezone one lot.
And obviously they're aware of that too before they buy it and everything. That,
okay. Yeah, that was my question. They're aware. Okay.
Last but not least, parcel 14, this used to be the old M&G trailer. Just to the west is a lead lift truck. Just to the east is an Anoka Farm and Garden. We've had interest in this parcel. So I'm just compiling a list of people that have had interest in it. Once we get it listed, I'll certainly reach out to them.
Now, this is going to be nearly the end of the cul-de-sac also, right?
So here's that parcel. It's my understanding that the cul-de-sac will go beyond this group and tie into here somewhere. And then we have access roads to get us to this stuff. That seem about right, Bruce?
That sounds about right, yeah.
Yep, so the cul-de-sac actually will go here. That was a change. We all thought that it was going to end right here. Push down. This one?
Okay. I believe so.
Go back. So a summary of the western properties. Parcel 12 is vacant. No appraisals ordered as of yet. Arm golf carts. Appraisal's done. Close on that one on Thursday, $550,000. That was the appraised value. They're also owners looking to improve the facade site. They've been holding back because they weren't allowed to do anything. And parcel 14, vacant land, and there's been a number of interested parties. So with that, any questions? I think I have consensus for all of the other items. Any questions you guys might have?
Chris?
Why don't we have appraisals ordered on all of them?
Well, because Met Council does the appraisals and they kind of just started working their way from east to west. So they wouldn't have even ordered the ones for Power Lodge yet because we're still working on that segment with the frontage road. But because of what we talked about and their interest in purchasing it, that's why they expedited it. So we went as far as those properties and we went as far as Arm Golf Cart because we had an existing one that was willing to buy right now.
Any other questions? You have what you need?
Hey, sure, we're gonna show.
All right. Moving on to item number three, 2025 strategic planning session.
Continue on with this one. So we met at the last work session and discussed a number of different items. Those were reflected in a redline version of the draft that was attached to tonight's agenda. And we spent a kind of just jump to one that we spent the most time on was the waterfront park and the court. Ultimately, the direction was to split that out into kind of two different phases, phase one being the water play area, and identify a way to construct that ideally in 2025 or as soon as possible. And then phase two, or objective two of that, was really look at what does the park as a whole look like, what it would be future amenities, things of that nature, and how would they tie in together. So to review, and we can review any one of them if you guys want, but kind of start with this one. So objective one under the waterfront park is to really move forward with what's called a schematic design, which is a step in the process of preparing the full construction plans. But we would look at the schematic design of the overall park, all future amenities, with a focus on how to really allow for the water play area to be constructed as a phase one. And as we work through that, looking at the park as a whole, we would be able to have a kind of a go, no-go type time frame in there where we say, yep, we're going to continue on with just the splash pad area, or, you know what, let's look at the bigger picture as well, and we'll build in kind of through that process a more detailed pro forma that looks at both what would be in the future building, if there is a future building, the operating costs of everything, kind of upfront construction costs, the funding sources, all of that. So as you kind of read through the action items, you know, we're proposing to start as soon as next meeting to bring a schematic design proposal forward to the council. That would take a few months to complete. That will give us a far more accurate cost estimate for the construction phase of stuff. And then in August, should you guys like everything that you're seeing, we would then move to the next step to get the actual construction plans prepared, and then bid it through the winter month. And the contractors that we're working with kind of identified a July 1st would be an aggressive but realistic opening date for a splash pad. And when we look at like a road project, it's largely the same process that we're talking about. We're talking about a design, bid, and build, where we design all the details and then we go out for a bid. That bid process is about a month-ish, month and a week to 2 week process. By the time we have the bids open for 3 weeks, I think is state requirement, and then we review and make sure they're accurate. The contractors bid what they were supposed to bid on, and then we'll bring it to council. So that's kind of the phase one of the waterfront park, focusing on the water play area. And we would, again, continue to go on and look at the rest of the park. So I think I'll stop and make sure we kind of hit what the council was thinking for direction on that.
Thoughts? I think that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that.
Again, as noted, made some red line changes and whatnot of the other action items and objectives. I do believe we stopped on strategy 8, objective 2, which is now page numbered as 12. Got that in there too. But I think the only change to that was add positive, proactive, and time relevant communication. Don't really remember if we were done with that. Otherwise, we can go through the rest of them too and take that feedback and direction.
All right. Chris, we still have a list we were working off from, and then definitely entertain other people as well. Shanna?
While he's working on that, did we ever talk to Anoka and seeing what they're doing with that whole community center thing? What's that sound like?
We have not had that. As far as like a partnership, we have not had that conversation. But we didn't make note. Probably separate from this, though.
Right, because wasn't the last meeting that we were at here, that was part of the conversation, directing staff to go ahead and have a conversation with Anoka and say, hey, you're doing a study, all this fun stuff, what?
I don't know if we formally asked the staff to do that. I think that was an idea that may have got washed out towards the end of the meeting. But if you'd like to suggest that, we can go around and see if that's something we want to do.
I think that's
good.
Dan?
Thank you, Mr. Brian. Yeah, I guess I personally wouldn't be a fan of that. I think, I don't know, I think we get enough time, you know, confusion with us to know, and, you know, I think there's so many logistics that just be confusing of how much we contribute, they contribute, where it would be located, what it would have. I mean, I guess if we're at the point where we're going to build one at the same time they were, we could talk about maybe not duplicate efforts, like both build, you know, indoor tennis courts or something, you know, so it's something different. But I think I personally wouldn't be a fan of partnering with them on that. I think it's just too many logistics and too many years of confusion and different councils, you know, doing different things. And yeah. And then it's not really for our residents either. I think our residents here are like, hey, you know, we're building a community center. Oh, but it's going to be in Anoka, though.
Yeah. I personally would like to have our own thing and be separate. I don't think it's a bad idea to inquire about what they're where they are at in their process and what hurdles and what they're seeing from their end. But as far as doing a joint Anoka Ramsey Community Center, I would be opposed to that.
How about Ramsey Anoka?
That's right, Ramsey Anoka. Well, now we're changing. Now maybe I'm on board. No, what other thoughts on that?
I'd like Dan's idea of not duplicating the same things that make ours separate.
I think we're geographically tied to like a border area as well, which
a border town.
A border, and then you're splitting lots, and it might become difficult. Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree. I'm opposed to a joint effort, but I think good communication is a really good idea. So, to avoid duplication of efforts and all the things that have been mentioned.
Don't tell them what we're doing. So they'll steal our ideas.
Aaron, come on, man.
Kirsten?
I would also agree that I think we should like have communication with them up front and just see what they're planning to do so there isn't a duplication. I'm not opposed to us joining with them, but I would rather us see have our own thing. That's kind of why we're doing this in the first place. Like I said, Anoka and everyone else around us has everything. So, shots fired, sorry.
We have some things.
Okay.
We have the quality, not the quantity.
So I'm hearing consensus, maybe we stick to our own thing, but you would still like our staff to
communicate.
Okay.
Because if they throw out a YMCA and it's within 15 miles of most of our people because it's on the border of Ramsey, is it a grand idea to do the exact same thing right downtown? And then it's oversaturation.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, yes, I guess formally, would we say as a council, we've asked the staff just to check in and Anoka, see what they're planning on, just so we don't reduplicate efforts and have the same facilities and oversaturate.
But I understand, though, too, that ours would be 20 years down the road anyways. But still, I mean, it's good.
Good to share information. Okay, Chris, back to you. What do you
well,
got?
I didn't next. I don't have more comments on what was written. So my next few are new ideas. So okay. I don't know if we need to walk through the rest of what.
Let's get through edits first. Does anybody have any additional edits to the draft that they would like to discuss? Chris is the only one with good ideas.
Ideas.
We'll see if they're good.
Exactly.
Well, why don't you continue then with some of your ideas?
Well, so don't know, every year, every couple of years, we ask the residents what they want and need, and then they don't have, we hear about volunteer opportunities, so I have written down volunteer coordinator, which last thing I want to do is hire a person to bring in volunteers. But if I'm just like, if we could figure out a way of managing, you know, we have people that want to be involved, and so volunteer coordinator to reach out and coordinate, and you know, the city needs people to do things. People want to do things, and that's part of our survey that's been found lacking. So at least I wanted to bring that up.
Thoughts?
Could they be incorporated with Parks and Rec type of position, or?
I think Abby does a lot of volunteer coordinating, right?
That's what I mean, yeah, maybe formalize it
so
a little bit.
So what's currently our part, our volunteer coordination efforts? What is that, where does that fall under? Mark, is that under you?
Yeah, I would say the preponderance of hours and individuals in a year are operating under Park and Rec. A lot of one-offs, you know, litter pickup here, that sort of thing. Tree plantings 2 weeks ago in the boulevard. We structured that as a partnership between the EPB and Park and Rec for kind of a framework around it. I will say that my observation for maximizing the use of volunteers is often done with a paid or part-time position. Plymouth is one example that is kind of a success in our business. You can find, especially as we see resident populations growing older, retired, in good health. Sometimes there's professionals that are retired, and you can attract a volunteer coordinator, but you really do need, to Chris's point, a person that has the time to successfully do that. It really does take a lot more time than one would think.
Michael.
Thank you. I think, too, that if you had a volunteer as the volunteer coordinator, you can have burnout, and then you can have turnover, and then it's just, it's going to not be consistent leadership, consistent results. There's no accountability. I think it's just asking to fail.
This is just an idea. No arrows. What about like a commission or a board for volunteer? Would that be something that, like, we have EPB, we have Parks and Rec, there was a volunteer board where you commissioners led that effort as part of a city effort? Is that something that other cities have done, or anybody have any ideas, rocks to throw at me? I'm just thinking a lot of Dan's lasering with his eyes right now.
That's great.
Hey. There is like the Ramsey Foundation, which, you know, I know they get called on often, but you know, maybe that
would be the,
could almost be the basis of, I mean, I'm not trying to volunteer those people.
Yeah.
But that idea, or that could be part of, you know, background for it.
Kirsten.
I think Mike's right. I think we need to have like a non-volunteer volunteer wrangler, or else it'll just be people not sticking around. We have to train the same person to train the other people, and then it'll just kind of fall to the wayside, I think. So I don't know how we figure that out.
When you get off council, you have a 4-year term of volunteer coordinator.
Reserve time.
Yeah, exactly.
Service duty.
Yeah. All right, any real, Dan, go ahead.
No, I agree. I guess I would not be in favor of hiring a new position for it, but I mean, I guess it would leave to staff, and I know every staff member is fully engaged in working to the best, but, you know, just have a discussion to say, is there anything we can move around to make, you know, how much time would that take, and, you know, that position, then is there something where we could fit it within existing staff time, you know, even like a part-time type of thing, so... And I would trust you if you'd say no, there just isn't, or, you know, would it work with Abby to just take a little chunk of her, you know, she does great work, so I don't want to minimize that either to fit it in there, because she's doing some of that, you know, just brainstorming. I'm not saying to do that, or just give it all to Mark, it's fine with me too. No, but no, so do I leave to staff to say, can we squeeze this somewhere and move some things around? If not, that's fine. Just let us know. But I would not be in favor of a new hire right now.
Shannon?
Would an intern kind of be able to, like, take in that spot? I mean, do we even hire interns in the city of Rome?
We've had interns in various departments in the past. So, we can look at an intern option. They're low risk, can be high reward, can be the other way too. But, we'll look at that option. We'll look at other existing roles, and can we shift task duties, absorb this into, and we'll just look into more a little bit of what cities have this type of staff and what that costs and looks like. But
I think the thing you have to be careful with interns, sometimes it takes just as much time monitoring and training an intern as work that they do. So I like the idea. Sometimes, though, the practicality of it is you're, I don't want to use the word babysit, but you're managing somebody, almost taking up as much time as they're saving. So, Chris, I mean, it's kind of, is your idea with city staff looking into what that looks like? What the cost would be if we did, which we don't. I don't think we want to go that route. But just looking into a little bit more, what action steps would you like to see based on your proposal?
I guess I'd like to see some follow-up of some sort, just some ideas, maybe some brainstorming. If people have contacts and could create a list, I think would be, churches, I know youth groups. I was asked by a youth group, does the city have things that they could do? Been approached by a couple other people. They don't know what to do. Again, I don't want to create a position for this, but yet I think there is kind of a pent-up need for it, or there's some demand. So,
okay. Eric?
Just a question on how do we track volunteers? Is there some database we put them into and give them assignments? Because I know churches use apps that can track volunteer hours, and if things are going on, they could say, I need 4 people, click this link, and it uploads, they put their information in, it goes to their iCalendar or whatever calendar they're using, so they're reminded, so they don't forget. Do we have something like that?
We may not. We make a point of reaching out to our known list of volunteers and the Adopt-a-Spot folks in March when we have an idea when the snow melt is, and remind them that we'd like them to get out there and do their cleanups as soon as possible after the snow melts, and then hope that coincides with Earth Week, so we can give them a little bit of cajoling. And we really have struggle with people responding to us, and so sometimes they, over the course of weeks, will correspond, send messages. And then most recently, we had an Adopt-a-Spot person that was just completely incommunicado. We took the sign down because we thought that might trigger them to get a hold of us, and that actually worked, and we put the sign back up. But they often are well-intended but really don't follow through real well with their commitments. They love the idea. They want to contribute. We have a few right now that are interested in picking up litter around the waterfront, so we got to try to organize that. And then I'll reveal also that I'm remiss in getting back to the mayor on a group that you're working with, and I have that on my list tomorrow to get back to you on that. But all those things do take time, and I would just also respond to the point that continuity is pretty important to know these people, and then also know how our systems and how our people and departments work here in terms of coordinating that access and the support they may need.
So the what we're using is essentially just remembering that these folks are supposed to be at these spots.
Our Parks Administrative Assistant has a list of these people, but there's only half a dozen regulars. Hoya is maybe one of the more organized ones, and they actually have their team of volunteers that work there. I think they get paid to go out and pick up litter twice a year by their employer. So that's one that may be successful, but again, it's only once or twice a year that they're actually out in the field volunteering.
So like a some sort of software wouldn't help with this effort?
I'm not aware of how it might help. Right now we have maybe
12 individuals or organizations that are periodically providing some volunteer services.
How many man hours do you think we dedicate towards assigning people volunteer positions? Like, are we making a mountain out of a molehill? Like, is it 12 hours a year that we spend staff time on this? Or is it, if we advertised and marketed that the Ramsey had these volunteer opportunities and it doubled, like, what would that look like? We have to get a shot in the dark.
Yeah, we're clearly spending in excess of 20 or 40 hours a year for different staff positions just picking up litter mm-hmm. in the spring, at least that amount. There would be a considerable amount of hours to organize all the different type of volunteer activities. And then communications is another aspect. And everyone has different levels of, or different capacities. In any given year, just as an example, we probably deal with or try to support at least 3 or 4 Eagle Scouts. And over the course of the decades and working with Eagle Scouts, maybe 1 out of 10 really does very well, is organized, and does a fantastic, meaningful project. And that's the essence of the Eagle Scout Award, is organizing others. Mm-hmm. And typically what you end up with is a mother or a father doing all the work for that individual, and their communication is done in the evening or on weekends when they check in with their Eagle Scout, him or her, and find out that they haven't done anything, and then they send a message, and then they want something immediately, and we've had 4 or 5 months to work on this, and now they need it done tomorrow because the Scout meeting is on Wednesday, and they have to have the whole project wrapped up. So it can be frustrating, and it can be time-consuming.
Okay.
So sorry that was a non-linear answer, but it takes more time than one would think.
Kirsten?
I just want to be, like, unique to specific volunteer things. But I know when I volunteer with Abby, she has me sign up through the website, the city website, and then it sends me an email, and so I don't know if they're tracked through that sometimes, those hours. So it's like they'll have you register. So for, like, the planting tree one, there was, like, a registration, and then for the 5K, when I volunteered for that, there was a register thing. And so I don't know, maybe that tracks people. And then she does send out, like, an email kind of monthly to say, like, what opportunities are coming up. So I'm not sure. I know some of it's, like, the Parks and Rec people. Not sure who else on the list. Like you said, maybe it's just random people that volunteer a lot. But that's how I've seen the volunteer stuff come out. So it mostly probably word of mouth other than social media and things like that. So, I'm not sure if that's helpful.
Okay, so just direction to pursue what that would look like and how that would...
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
What could we do? What would be a suggestion? What wouldn't do make it work too?
Yes. I think to your point, this is a strategic plan. This is something that we as the council get to have input on, where we can give staff direction to create a service for the community. So I think at least starting off with digging into what that actually looks like. And then, you know, you brought something up, Mark, as well, maybe even leveraging community partners. Like, it sounds like maybe the Eagle Scouts haven't been the best, but maybe even if it's identifying another organization in Ramsey that would want to leave that up, like, they could be a liaison on our behalf or something of that nature. Could be a strike up a good partnership. As to not cross paths, I won't say anything officially, but, like, Pack Charter School has a volunteer coordinator. Like, maybe they would say, hey, they don't have a lot going on. Maybe they could help the city of Ramsey. And it would be something that would be, you know, a partnership between a school and the community. So maybe some options like that as well.
Awesome.
Okay, what else do you got?
Well, so in the last, I don't know, 6-8 months, we've had some high-profile, I'll say, police activity in our city that isn't positive. I don't know that there's a council thought or that needs to be involved, and certainly not looking to tell the police officers how they do their work or any of that, but I'm just trying to figure out, is there something that, as a group, we need to think about, talk about, understand, change? I mean, you know, hiring 100 new officers isn't going to change a murder suicide, for instance. But making sure that our city isn't seen as an opportunity to cause trouble or have it end up here, I guess I just wanted to throw it out and kind of start a discussion or see if there is a strategic plan item that we would like to talk about or something like that.
Kirsten?
Talk about maybe adding some sort of social worker or mental health response to our department also. I think that would be positive.
Thoughts? Are there county resources we can lean on to help with some of that sort of stuff? Crisis mitigation, like proactive crisis mitigation, do they have?
It's very, it's just getting started, so it's not truly promoted a whole lot. A lot of agencies, I should say a lot, there's been a few other agencies that have gone out and gotten their own social workers embedded with their departments. That seems to be the more successful route, so that, you know, they've staggered a little bit on how many, what hours and things like that, but having that resource readily available, they have the person ride with an officer. If there's some type of mental health or crisis call, that they can have that that squad with that social worker respond, and they can start down that road to get some more resources for them.
Is that something that tends to work? I mean, by that I mean we hear other cities take initiatives such as those. Sometimes I've heard it complicates things as well. You certainly can't replace an officer with a social worker. I feel like most of the time you end up sending two people to do one person's job. However, there are benefits, as you said, follow-ups and things like that can happen from the social worker more proactively than a busy police officer. But do you know, is that something the police department would find valuable, or is it almost something where it's another thing for them to manage and to keep on top of?
Probably want to do a little bit more research to find out what successes some of these other departments have had with it. I think the benefit would be that we have the social worker there, and that we have more resources, that they're better trained with the dealing with the mental health or the crisis type situations versus us as police officers. We do have to go through annual training every time, every licensing cycle, to go through some of this. But, you know, we're getting one class every 3 years, whereas you have a social worker that might have, there's going to have a lot more experience and training and the know-how on this. That would be more of a benefit to us. I don't know if it's something that we as a department would necessarily need to take on, or if it'd be something that we could, you know, partner with another agency nearby, like Anoka, to get this taken care of. So, you know, there's stretches where we're multiple times a day going to it, and then there can be long stretches where it might be a week and a half before we're getting a call. But it seems that they go in spurts at the times when we're getting this, and it would be a matter of trying to, you know, how do you figure that out when it's going to occur?
Sure.
To Councilmember Riley's point, you know, the murder-suicide, we don't know if there's been any mental health to it or any of that, or if this is just something that, you know, came down the pipe after, you know, something else. You know, was there more to it than what we're just seeing with dealing with the situation?
Does this fall along the lines of what you're thinking, these sort of suggestions, or are we off track from what you're envisioning?
Well, I guess it's kind of a question. Is there something that, as a policy group, should we be discussing about our city, about changes, about something that the police need, something our residents need that would help police, you know? I don't want to make the news, I guess.
nor do we. You know, we don't like going out to handle those type situations either and dealing with them, because like you said, it does put the city in a bad light when we have a murder suicide. Some of these other calls where we have to bring SWAT units out to deal with the situation. I agree, it doesn't put the city in a good light, but it's hard to predict when this is going to occur and when we're going to deal with that. Going back to your initial question, I know some cities do have like anti-crime commissions, they do things like that, but it brings both business and residents together to try to keep up to speed and kind of, you know, keep the city and the residents and businesses all up to speed on what's going on. And maybe there is some proactivity in that and as far as moving forward with things and programs that could get out to deter that.
And I think it's hard to prevent it, but I don't want to say this as though it's just covering our butts, but I think it's even more of a, if it does happen, we have a better response saying, these are resources available to you as a community. Because having a social worker probably wouldn't have stopped a murder-suicide from happening. But if you do, you can then advertise afterwards. If you are in need of help, if you feel here, contact XYZ for resources. So I feel like, I don't know how much it proactively help. I mean, even though they'd be doing proactive work, but I think it would soften when things happen that we have a plan in place. Michael, and then Kirsten.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm thinking in past life, programs have come up like Crime Watch, and I can picture the sticker in my mind. these kinds of things where you involve the community in just paying attention. I don't know how successful those things are at kind of curbing the level of crime, but I'd be curious to know if somebody has any input on that kind of thing.
Yeah, the program in itself is good. A lot of what it falls back onto is the neighborhood or that area that wants to do, like you're talking about the Crime Watch. It's going to fall back onto that and how proactive they're going to be. A lot of times they get this and they organize it, and then it's a matter of how much commitment they want to put to the program to organize for their area. Not to tout anything, but we know Facebook and all those are out there, and it seems like as soon as something happens in one part of the city, someone's on a Facebook post or whatever, and it starts spreading. So as much as it is to maybe signify that neighborhood is involved in the neighborhood watch, there's social media out there that's actually pushing this a lot quicker to different areas of the city to get the information out there, whether it's a break-in, speeders, things like that. It just seems to be that the social media has taken over that aspect of it.
Kirsten, and then Kirsten, Eric, Dan.
It might be nice to reach out to Chief Badani from Blaine. They do have a social worker embedded. They have victim witness services embedded, and they have a specific non-officer, like a civilian, that does community outreach. And so I know that we're not quite at Blaine level, and I know Coon Rapids also does have a community outreach person as well that's a civilian. But I think that the more that we can get into the community front-facing, and it's not necessarily utilizing an officer's time, so we're not paying an officer to do this. We can get civilians to do this kind of stuff. It might be behoove us to get ahead of it. It could be preventative. And as you said, maybe it wouldn't have prevented this most recent incident, but it can prevent further incidents moving forward, knowing that there's someone locally that people can go to before these things escalate, because I can't imagine a scenario in which a murder-suicide is not a mental health issue. And that there wasn't something that people saw before that was going on there. So, I would like to see us definitely invest more in our police department to have folks that are working on these things. And not necessarily taking time away from your patrol officers from having to do that work.
Eric.
And I think I'm thinking about a national night out type stuff, and we're going around, we're talking to these neighborhoods, and some of these neighborhoods are newer. Like we get a new neighborhood in our community like once a month, I think, sometimes. And getting out in front of that and saying, are you guys interested in having this type of program in your neighborhoods so we can get ahead of it as much as possible so they're not scared to go to the cops if they hear a gunshot? That could be a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think these are all great discussions, and I think that, if Member Riley kind of agrees, this is what we could flush out throughout the year of the strategic plan, and some kind of a plan of saying, look into these type of programs, talk to other departments about, what's the most effective, solution for, helping with mental health or
you know, making the grids come together. So I would think, would that make sense to you, Member Riley? Like,
yeah,
high level, you know, how can we improve? You know, are there aspects we can, and you phrase it better, but is there things we can add to our department or promote within the community to help improve safety and wellness or whatever?
So the action item would be for the Ramsey Police Department to look into different ways we can support mental health, community outreach, and things of that nature for proactive mitigation of crises.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, one more, two more, three more.
One more.
One more. We can do it. We got 10 minutes.
Discussed that already.
I was
part of budget.
This is the second
annual survey.
We'll downvote it.
So, Mr. Hagen, that wasn't a success last time, and we tried to do it every 2 years. Was it just last year that we were unsuccessful, or?
Yeah, we did it in 2024. So.
Okay, so it's not on track for doing that, but.
Can you say what we're doing again?
Yeah, the annual survey.
Oh.
2026 would be the next budgeted every 2 year deal. I would agree. I think it was a challenging survey for a number of different reasons, but they still felt like it was statistically accurate and things of that nature. But yeah, I think if we want to do it again, there's some discussion that we need to have on that. So
that would maybe just be an item for next year to discuss where and how we move forward with that?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I guess maybe direction tonight, really. And I don't know if it's necessarily a strategic plan item, but do we want to budget for it next year? I think the last one, it costs $22,000.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
So we've been on a pretty good track every 2 years doing this, and it's a national company, and they ask the same kinds of questions over and over, so you can compare to other cities around the country, and then you can compare to yourself how it was, and are you getting better or whatever. And the last time we tried to change a couple questions, or the wording had gotten, I'll say, out of line.
The demographics, remember?
Yeah, and they were asking questions that we didn't think were exactly appropriate, so we didn't want to ask all the questions, and we wanted to kind of change the phrasing on a couple. They weren't responsive exactly. They sent out questions that weren't the wording that we wanted, and then it was like a validity issue, I think. So we got a lot of our money back, part of our money back.
Part of our money back. I can't remember exactly what they discounted it, but we asked for all of it, and they didn't give us all of it. But, yeah, ultimately, we wanted to adjust the number of questions, and their response was, no, you shouldn't do that, because then we can't track from year to or survey to survey and have it compared. And then we had an issue. We purchased custom questions, which don't track year to year. It's just more of a one-off, hey, do you like this idea or what have you. And they didn't have it in the online version. They screwed something up, so we missed a portion of the responses, just didn't have access to that question. And then we also told them to take away some demographics questions, but they left those in there. And there was some concern about that on what they're doing with the data, why do they have it? Now they're changing the survey, and how does that look? It felt like it wasn't a professional survey that we put out. But ultimately, to Councilman Riley's point, it's a national company. Several cities use them, so it gives you a share of data. Use it how you want, but cities roughly the same demographics and population as Ramsey in a metro area or outlying metro area compared to other cities and other states that are somewhat similar.
So what was the nexus behind that question?
Was it time to start talking about thinking about it, planning it? And I'm kind of hearing the answer is in a year, it's probably time to start thinking about planning it.
If we want to keep on the every 2 year, we did it in 2020,
And then we opted out of 2022. Largely, it was, we know what the response is going to be. Your roads are terrible. And, you know, kind of saved a bunch of money and applied it to roads, right? And then we did it in 24. So we, by rights, we're 2026, we're due for it. And we would do it, I think we tried kicking it off sometime in quarter one so we could get the feedback by budget season.
Do most cities do that, you know? I mean, did Hanover, or did, you know, other cities in the area that do surveys?
Hanover wasn't big enough.
yes, we talked about it at the coffee
shop. It's not uncommon. Yeah, we just opened the window and it was close enough, all the residents were. It's not uncommon to do them.
I'd like to see it done, if I were to give an advice or opinion on it, I guess.
Michael?
Yeah, thank you. So if we are going to do it in 2026, when do we need to start thinking about it? It seems like starting 2026, thinking about it.
Right now, so we can put a dollar amount in the budget.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, yeah, we would get contract language and we'd start preparing the questions early in the year. Timeline's really on us. But if I recall, it was like a 3 or 4 month process for them to do the actual survey and then get us the results back. We could look at different options too. I know QCTV does a customer survey and they work with a different firm and they will call. So that way they ensure that they get a certain number of responses and across different varying demographics, age range, things like that. So they can basically guarantee they're getting well-rounded feedback, where if you looked at our survey, it was heavy on the retired age that were the responders.
Okay. Is there a what's the cost on that?
I'd have to call, and I don't even know if this company does them for cities or if they're more geared towards television companies.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it could be all part of the strategic plan then, I guess. Looking down there.
Any other comments, or are we good to adopt this with the said changes?
Thank you, Chris, for your work on this.
Thanks for indulging me.
I like it.
All right. Then moving on, item number three, topics of future discussion. We have our review future topics list calendar, so keep an eye on that. Anything to add to that?
I'll just note that I do not plan to be in person for the next meeting, so we'll keep the discussion points hopefully more non-controversial in discussion, and it could be a little bit on the lighter side, but just to note, we're looking at doing the audit. Usually we do that late June, but the auditors requested to move that up, so that'll be about 20 or so minutes at the work session, a little bit more in-depth review, and then they stick around and do a short high-level summary presentation at the regular meeting. NeoGov Discussion is a software program based around HR and integrates into payroll and things of that nature, and then also on the to-be-determined date, but the bottom one, Mayor Heineman, Councilmember Olson, requested an indecent exposure ordinance discussion. So I think to fill the work session time on June 10th with, I think those three would fill that time generally pretty well.
Okay. And then we got Mayor, Staff, Council input. We got a couple minutes here. We have the list of the different committees that we have been at. We could maybe, with time the way it is, we could kind of punt this till next meeting, unless anybody has something that sticks out that they really want to share regarding any of their meetings they've attended. Anybody have any you want to share?
WMO, you know, every month, this last month was odd. We didn't have any permits in front of us, but they expect there'll be a lot more next month, it sounds like. It's in the middle of things that our group will have to talk about a lot, like the generation plan or whatever. They update their big plan, kind of like a comp plan, every few years or whatever, handful of years. When it's time to discuss that, I'll make sure the council is aware and gets to discuss.
Okay. I was at the Joint Anoka County Joint Law Enforcement Council. I have some notes. When we go over this next, I'll read them over. Nothing crazy and pressing to touch on. A lot of finance, budgeting stuff. Anybody else? All right. We have some time back, 5 minutes. We'll go ahead and adjourn. Well, there's the whole Supreme Court ruling.
Oh, that's wrestling, not sexual.
Michael, I had some residents reach out asking what the city's liability is on that if somebody freaks out at a bar or whatever. So we're just figuring out how that works with police departments and how it can be enforced or not enforced. And we talked to Prince about it. He said there could be some.